Lutherans in the UK, Living Grace.
Welcome to listen and to watch our next episode of the podcast Lutherans in the UK, Living Grace. This podcast is made by the team in the Council of Lutheran Churches. My name is Meelis Süld. I'm outreach coordinator, and I'm also Lutheran pastor in the UK. And together with me is Anna Kraus, who is a general secretary of the Council of Lutheran Churches, also in the UK. And today's topics, we will talk about adult social care, and we will highlight one of the organizations that is helping people with disabilities, and that is Bethvegi, and people from the organization are with us, and there is also a Lutheran connection with this organization, Bethvegi, so that's why they are highlighted in our podcast today. And we will, at the end of the episode, also share information about the Council of Lutheran Churches, our member churches' activities, so stay with us for the next half an hour.
Lutherans in the UK, Living Grace.
And now I ask to introduce our guests themselves. Together with us are then the people from charitable company Bethvegi. Welcome to the podcast. Let's start from Steph.
Hello, yes. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to join your podcast. Yes, I'm Steph Kay. I'm the chief executive for Bethvegi. Hello.
Hello. And?
Yes, hello. My name is Derek Lum, and I'm the chair of trustees for Bethvegi.
Welcome. Nice to have you here. So let's explain how the Council of Lutheran Churches and the Lutherans are connected with the Bethvegi.
Bethvegi go in the UK goes back to 1994 when we were formed by an American organisation. At that time, it was also called Bethvegi, but it's now called Mosaic. And they provided learning disability services in the US. And one of the senior management team there, a lady called Donna Werner, was involved in a conference and met three organisations from the UK who were providing sort of social services in their local authority areas. And the relationship developed over the coming years, with Donna actually spending some time in the UK and resulting in 1994 in the American organisation choosing to set up another charity in the UK to bid for services there to local authorities. And they secured a service in Shropshire for Shropshire Council, and Bethvegi UK was formed. When it was formed, it had two organisations as members. One of those was Mosaic in the US, and the second organisation was the Council of Lutheran Churches. So the Council of Lutheran Churches has been involved with Bethvegi right from the outset.
And if we would describe the organisation today, what are the main goals and what are the activities? How Bethvegi is operating?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, we support adults with learning disabilities. That's primarily what we do. We also support some people with mental health needs as well, and physical or sensory needs. Around about 150 adults across Shropshire and the West Midlands is are the number of people that we're supporting. You know, we're what we would call ourselves a positive behaviour organisation, which has some nice connotations, because what it means really is that, you know, the way that we support the people, we also use those same approaches with the staff, so that we have, you know, a really kind of nice culture across the organisation, good values, and we're very person-centered. So we primarily support people who live in their own homes, and that can mean one person, it can mean people living together as joint tenants, and all of those people will be tenants, and that's what we call supported living. And that support can be, you know, from maybe 50, 60 hours a week with some overnight stays, right up to having two members of staff if that's what that person needs. We have a couple of small registered care homes for people who need a bit more complex support. We have a shared life service, which really does what it says on the tin. You know, the carers are self-employed and they've chosen to have somebody sharing their life. So somebody either lives with them or is there on a short-term, you know, respite type basis. And the skill there is really matching the people to the right carer so that, you know, the environment's right, the connections are good. If they've got pets, it's the right fit, etc. And then in addition to that, we've got three day opportunities, and they provide support during the day for people. We've got Oak Farm, which is just a wonderful resource. It's a small working farm, provides support for around about 25 people a day. They split into small groups when they come in. They're called the workers, actually, which is a really nice touch as well. They split into small groups, they go off and they do whatever they've chosen to do that day with the member of staff and complete their tasks, you know, feeding animals, watering, working in the garden on the crops, you know, whether it's planting or harvesting, and then cooking some of the produce to make jams and chutneys for the shop. So they've got a farm shop on site. But yeah, it's such a lovely model is the farm, because it gives people real meaningful activities. Inage Lane is another one of our day opportunities, and there they do an awful lot of creative craft making stuff, which they sell online. They also sell in a couple of retail outlets throughout the county, and you know, people we support go there and fill up the kind of glass case that they'll have in these locations, so that people, when they're going in, say to the tourist place, they can buy these little gifts, and yeah, they get through stuff really well, so that's all positive. And then our last one is a real kind of community-based service. We have a service for older people with learning disabilities, and also a library. The 3-day opportunities were a transfer from the local authority, and we were really keen because it added some additional diversity to the organisation. So I'm really proud of what we've got, is that nice mixture of experiences and opportunities right across the board. So that's really what we do today. And as you know, it's a kind of medium-sized charity now, and you know, it's as I said, it's a lovely organisation. And our goals really at the moment, you know, are to continue providing that high quality service and continue to recruit us, you know, a sufficient supply of staff. You know, it's really important that we have people who've got the right values and attitudes, and you know, that's kind of works hand in hand with the people we support. It's really important that we involve the people who are using our service in as much as possible, if everything that we possibly can do. So we try hard to do that. You know, we still continue to look at purchasing property, because through our reserves, it's a great way to ensure that there's really good quality housing available for people. So we have got 3 properties, and, you know, as long as it's the right property in the right location so that people have got good community access and it's of good standard, you know, those things are really helpful to our local authority partners as well. Yeah, continuing the way that we've managed the organisation, particularly we've moved on from some of what we've been doing, paper-based records, to digital systems. It was a big feature in our last business plan, and you know, absolutely the right thing to do. Though, as you'll probably know, those things take some time to bed in, and we're still in that final phase of bedding in and working with some of these systems. But you know, it's certainly been a good experience. We are registered and regulated by the Care Quality Commission, which I'm sure you've come across and heard of. All of the services that we provide are rated as good. There's 4 levels to The CQC's ratings, outstanding is the top, and good is the second one. We haven't got anything in outstanding yet, but we're definitely continuing to aim for that. But we certainly don't want anything less than good, because, you know. But just bearing in mind that outstanding is something like 1% of the ratings that are handed out. You know, we want to be in that 1% club one day, so we keep striving towards that.
Anna Kraus, you have been also involved at the meetings and discussing the situation of Bethvegi and being representing the Council of Lutheran Churches there. What is your impression of what the organization is doing and what impact it has played?
Yeah, I'm one of the trustees of Bethvegi. Through the connection with the Council of Lutheran Churches, Bethvegi asked whether I would like to become a trustee. And I think some of my predecessors have also been trustees of Bethvegi. And it's really important and interesting, I think. I mean, Bethvegi is not a religious organization anymore, I should say. But the link for us is really, really good, because we as the council do not have a chance to have a big social diaconal sort of impact. And through the link with Bethvegi, we really see that kind of work being done in the UK, and we can support it in small little ways, I think. And it's really, I think, a sector that has been forgotten in many ways, especially adults with learning disabilities. And so the council can also be a platform to raise those issues in the church world and say, look, there are people that are, I'm sure Steph will talk about the struggles that the sector and Bethvegi are facing at the moment. So we can really also try and you know, be sort of a platform to voice concerns and to work with our church people towards more fairness and an equal society in all respects.
Mm.
We know that the cost of living is high, and we have a cost of living crisis, economical crisis, and problems around the world. But how does it impact this sector, adult social care, and what are exactly the challenges that Bethvegi is facing at this point?
Yeah, I mean, financially, you're absolutely right. 13 years of austerity have really bitten into the way that we are able to pay our staff. And that's really difficult, particularly now when everything's just starting to crystallise in that really challenging way for our staff. For 13 years ago, I was with the organisation. And if I look back to those times, you know, the settlements that you would get from the local authority were very different than they are today. We do, have to quite, you know, challenge the local authority on some of their decisions, their annual uplift decisions, and we've done that over the time. But also recognising that they've got big gaps in their funding pot as well. So it's not necessarily a blame game, but, you know, what they get is really handed down from central government, and it has eroded things within the sector. It's made things really quite tough. But nevertheless, you know, we are still here and we are still getting on with those things, and we are fortunate that we've got, you know, the trustees that we've got around us, and the reserves that we've got that, you know, can help us project forward for growth and new business. But, you know, things like the increase in national minimum wage, I'm sure we'll all agree, is absolutely wonderful to see, but that's got to be funded. And if you've got to pay, you know, a 9.7% increase, which I think it was this year, but what you're getting is something like 6 or 7%, then that's really tough, and it's starting to really bite. I mean, we did say that was going to happen this year to the councils, you know, that some of the things that have come down the line over the years have just not been sufficient. And so now we're really starting to see that laid bare. Recruitment is the other challenge for us, on top of financials. And you know, the whole UK is feeling that pain. And hospitals, well, you'll be hearing all about the hospitals' problems, and social care is just, well, it's an extension of the NHS, really, isn't it? And if it were treated in a similar way and had similar settlements, funding settlements, maybe we wouldn't be in such a bad shape as a sector. I don't mean Bethagy when I say that.
Yeah.
And the Council of Lutheran Churches now has decided to support Bethagy with £10,000. Maybe we can also explain about this situation and the decision made by the council. What were the considerations? Maybe Anna, you can say that.
Well, as a trustee of Bethagy, I can't really, because I have a massive interest in this. So maybe, Steph, you can say what you agreed with the Council of Lutheran Churches, because I really can't be a part of this discussion.
No. No, that's understood. No, we made a bid. Assistive technology is certainly developing across social care, and you know, little things that help people go about their daily lives and have that independence. We'll have seen a lot of that kind of telecare type products that you have in with a lot of older people, and there's over a few years, you know, the council's been trying to push assistive technology so that, because ultimately there are some tasks, some things that can be done that don't need a human being, and things, you know, ways that people can get help and independence through using their technology rather than using support from staff members. So I absolutely understand the drive towards assistive technology. So we had some funding through another initiative, and through that we had employed somebody, and he was doing a really nice project around, it was mainly around filming and that side of things, but he started to get involved in some of the assistive technology, basically because we didn't have anybody else, and he's quite techie and smart, really. So Tim was keen to carry on working with us, and we successfully got some funding from, I can't remember the name of the organisation at the moment, it'll come back to me, Bailey Thomas Fund, that was it. So they granted us £10,000, which was roughly about a third of what we needed. And we approached the Lutheran Council with our bid and explained what benefits this would bring to the people we support. Because to have somebody actually lead on the project and know which bits of kit would work better than others is really quite helpful. So Lutheran were very kind and agreed to the £10,000 grant, and we'll put the rest in the pot because we haven't got a third donor, if you like, but we'll make up that third, and that will add, you know, such an awful lot of value to the organisation. So yeah, absolutely appreciate that grant. It was a, you know, a big round of applause when we got that. That's for sure. I don't really want to add anything, Derek. Sorry, Anne.
Sorry, I mean, assistive technology can be anything from Alexa you know, bigger stuff as well. So, yeah,
really absolutely. And I mean, what the council of the council that we've mainly been working with on assistive technology would be Shropshire, and they've really invested in a lot of the kit. So they've got different devices that somebody can use. So that they'll have it all in a tablet, and that tablet will be theirs then, and they can, you know, look up recipes. They can do a whole manner of things with it. So these little devices, they're a lot of money, really. So they're a great investment, and if they work well for the person, remind them to take the medication, you know, lock the doors, all those kind of things, they can be really beneficial to driving people to be more independent, because, you know, most of the people we support, that's what they want. They want to do things for themselves.
Whose responsibility is social care? Now we are talking about adult social care and people with learning disabilities, people with disabilities. Is it central government, local government, families of those people, church, everyone on the street? And there are very many different models in different countries how the social care is provided.
Yes, in the UK, It's a statutory obligation for local authorities to provide services for people with learning disabilities. And they essentially generally contract those services out. Going back sort of 30 or more years, then the local authorities often provided the services themselves. And therein lay some of the problems, because there were institutions like long stay hospitals and things that people were simply put into those institutions, and often, you know, there was no immediate way of them being able to extract themselves from there. Obviously, families are also supportive. There are many people with learning disabilities that, you know, are supported entirely by their family, with funding from the local authority. Primarily, it is a local authority responsibility financially, but they get central government funding to do that. And so the government actually ultimately does control a lot of the purse strings here.
Mm. It was an interesting question as well, because I think, yeah, the local authority has that statutory responsibility, but I think you're right. I think the responsibility is everybody's responsibility to make sure that we're caring for those who are unable to care for themselves. You know, if you meet the criteria for a package of support from the local authority, that's great. That falls under that statutory obligation. But if you don't, and we have many, many people as that threshold of, I can't think of the word now, but the threshold for eligibility has increased, we've seen many people kind of fall by the wayside. So no longer able to receive support or wouldn't qualify for support. And that's really difficult, because they may not have families, they may not have people around them who care. And we know that those are the people who can be very easily preyed on within our communities. So looking out for those signs and seeing that something doesn't quite fit right, I mean, that particular side of things is definitely everybody's responsibility, isn't it, to notify the right people. Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining our Lutheran podcast, Steph Kay and Derek Lam from the charitable organization Bethveji. And very much wishing you the best in your work and activities. And I hope that Bethveji can continue supporting people with learning disabilities and with different disabilities in their lives.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the invite. And just one little ask, if you can follow us on social media, you know, like our posts, the usual kind of things, subscribe to our newsletter, Bethveji Buzz, anything like that, anything that you can do to help us is always appreciated. But yeah, thank you for your time and thank you for the opportunity. It's much appreciated.
Thank you.
Bethveji is also seeking new trustees. We're looking for skilled people, professional people, or people with experience of living with disabilities. So anyone that feels that they may be able to contribute to the organisation, we'd love to hear from them.
Thank you, Derek and Steph.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lutherans in the UK, Living Grace.
Lutherans in the UK, Living Grace. We are talking about now the Council of Lutheran Churches activities and member churches activities. This is Anna Kraus with me, and my name is Meili Sult. If we look a few days back, then in the Finnish church, in the beginning of July, there was CTEs, Churches Together in England, Fourth Presidency Group's Thanksgiving service. And that's because, Anna, you were elected and started your work as Fourth Presidency Group President. And maybe just for the background, what is this Fourth Presidency Group? inside the churches together in England, and Churches Together in England is an ecumenical network.
Yes, so Churches Together in England is split into sort of six church groups that roughly have a similar outlook. So there's the Anglican Church has one presidency, the Orthodox Churches have a presidency, the Roman Catholic Church has a presidency. There's the Free Churches group, which is a quite diverse group of churches, including, for example, the Methodist Church and United Reformed Church, but also churches in community, I think. So, yeah, really wide range of churches in there. We've got the Pentecostal and Charismatic Church group, and then we've got the so-called Fourth Presidency group. And the reason why we don't really have a name other than Fourth Presidency group is that, again, we are a really diverse group of churches. We have the Quakers, or Society of Friends, in England. We have the Evangelical Lutheran Church in England, our Lutheran brothers and sisters from the International Lutheran Council. We've got the German-speaking Synod of Protestant Churches there, the Council of Lutheran Churches, which represents all the different member churches of the council there. And I think still the Church of Scotland in England, but they are moving to the Free Churches group for sort of logistical reasons at the moment. So we're a small group, and we're a bit like the odds and sods that won't really fit in any of the other church groups. We used to be a bit bigger, but there was a disagreement over same-sex marriage 4 years ago when my predecessor wanted to start her presidency. So some people, some churches moved away into other groups. But we're still a diverse group in that sense. There are churches in our group that do not support same-sex marriage. There are churches that do. You can't really label us. And I think that's the challenge and the opportunity, really, to do ecumenism.
Why aren't Lutherans together with the Methodists, for example? They are in the Free Church group, yes?
Yes, so the Free Churches group is something that was established a long, long time ago when the Church of England was really the only valid church in the country, I think. I mean, don't quote me on this. And the Roman Catholic Church, of course. But then there was also a group of sort of non-conformist churches and the Methodists, and they formed their own sort of church group that's called the Free Churches group. So there's a longer history to the Free Churches group that wasn't just formed under the CTE umbrella. There are a lot of churches like the Methodist Church, the URC, that have been a part of the Free Churches group for quite some time, or ever since it was established. And that's why they are in the Free Churches group rather than the Fourth Presidency group. So, yeah, I mean, that's I think, a different entity as such that has become a presidency. So, I should say, churches that are a member of Church Together in England and are also in the Free Churches group tend to be in that presidency group.
And what can you do in the Churches Together in England organization as the president of the Fourth Presidency group?
So, I mean, again, the Fourth Presidency group has a very flat hierarchy. And in all of the other presidency groups, I would say it's normally sort of an ecclesial superstar that is their president, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Archbishop of Westminster, at the moment, an Orthodox Archbishop. For the Fourth Presidency group, it's Helen Cameron, who's just been elected president of the Methodist Conference for next year. And for the Pentecostal and Charismatic Church, it's a bishop as well. So we've got a very, you know, very high-ranking individuals within those sort of church contexts. We are not the kind of group of churches that have those ecclesial superstars, because a lot of our churches don't have that very, you know, steep hierarchy. So it's more a collegial way of working. And in the group itself, it's more a convening responsibility to make sure that we meet and talk and do ecumenism together. And then two of us will always go to the president's meetings when all the presidents come together. I mean, two or three times a year, I think, to sort of look at things. So there will be me at the moment and someone else from the group. So it will never be just the president in our group. That's how we work it at the moment. And the presidents are really, if there is something that really affects all our churches and we can make a common statement and it should really have an impact, I think that's when the presidents put out a statement. For example, on the climate crisis, you know, then that would be an example where we would all feel we similarly need action on certain issues. Yeah, so there is a lot of impact when the presidents come together and sign a statement, and you can see the, you know, the width of churches that are behind that particular statement. We can't always sign those statements for various reasons, because some churches are not able to support certain things for very good reasons within their own structures and theology. So again, it's a typical ecumenical diplomatic situation very often. But yeah, it's more a representational role, I think.
Lutherans in the UK, living grace.
In the first part of the podcast, we were talking about organization Bethvegie supports people with disabilities, especially learning disabilities. They received £10,000 from the Council of Lutheran Churches, and grant giving is important for the council. What are the options, and which other organizations or individuals could also be helped by the Council of Lutheran Churches at this point?
Sorry, I was stuck there. Grant giving. So we have several pots of grants, really. There are some churches that are supported by a grant agreement that is supposed to bring them a bit more stability. We have a student hardship fund that where students in our student chaplaincy can apply to get some support for the cost of living, which at the moment, as I'm sure you'll all understand, is quite important. And then we've got a general pool of funds where, I mean, primarily our member churches really can apply to be supported for specific projects. And it's really not a very steep hurdle that you have to fill in an application form and, you know, just tell us why this is important to you, and you have to make sure that you comply with certain standards in the UK legislation, like safeguarding and things like that. So it's primarily aimed to support our member churches, but if you are a religious organization in the UK and you have a really important project, then you can also send us a grant application, and our grants committee will look at it and make a decision whether or not to fund it. Yeah.
Some upcoming events as well. Our student chaplaincy was already mentioned, and student chaplaincy together with the German congregation is holding desert worship prayers or meetings once a month, and this is happening at the St. Mary's German Church in London, 10 Sandwich Street, not far from King's Cross, St. Pancras, and in July, it will be on the 27th of July, it's a Thursday, and It's 6 p.m. 6 p.m. So it tends to be the last Thursday of a month when at St. Mary's German Lutheran Church, together with the student chaplaincy, there is a, this worship, which is a quiet moment for prayer and singing together the famous worship songs. Another event that I would like to mention is on the same week, the last week of July, and it is again regular, how to say, Vespers. It could be also called a concert, because we are talking about the Bach Vespers, which are in St. Anne's Lutheran Church every last Sunday of a month. In August there will be a break, but in on the 30th of July, 6:30 p.m., City Bach Collective will perform a Bach cantata. And these Bach cantatas were, of course, originally written to church context and to be performed at Sunday service. So St. Anne's Lutheran Church has put those Bach cantatas, Lutheran composers' cantatas, to their original context, and together with, as I said, City Bach Collective, they are performed at St. Anne's Lutheran Church, which worships at St. Mary at Hill, a church at Lowat Lane in the city. And before we are ending our podcast, I wanted, Anna, you also to share information about safeguarding training, which are coming up in autumn.
Indeed, yes. As I'm sure everyone knows, safeguarding in churches is of paramount importance. I know many of our member churches will be in safeguarding training with other larger church contexts like the Church of England, but there are some specific issues for our member churches, so we want to provide a sort of Lutheran council-wide safeguarding training with our safeguarding advisor. And the two dates that we have for this year are in the autumn. The 19th of October, there will be a safeguarding training during normal working hours. We still have to sort of establish the exact time, and that will be in person at Trident House. And the second date of the same safeguarding training, but in the evening, is on the 15th of November at 6 o'clock, also in person at Trident House. So it's the same training on two separate dates at two separate times of the day, so those people who can come during working hours can choose the first, and those people who would rather come after work can come on the 15th of November at 6 o'clock. As I said, it will be an in-person safeguarding training where we'll talk about case studies. It will be for leaders within our church context, pastors or people who lead a specific group, like Sunday school, or work on a regular basis with vulnerable adults and children. So do sign up for it. There's an Eventbrite link, so we know that you're coming. And if you would like to come, but you live further away and your church cannot fund the journey, do get in touch with us, because we can support your travel costs if you want to be a part of this safeguarding training. So please get in touch if you want to come, and make sure you notify us if you're coming. Thank you.
And the training is free for participants.
Yes, absolutely. And from our member churches.
Thank you for sharing this information, Anna. Anna Kraus, the General Secretary of the Council of Lutheran Churches. My name is Melis Sult. I'm Outreach Coordinator and Lutheran Pastor. I am thankful for all our listeners and those who have been watching us on Facebook. Have a great day.
Bye. Thank you, Melis.
Lutherans in the UK, living grace.